Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Chris Thiele plays well with others. The mandolin player has joined us here on Soundcheck in the past with the bassist Edgar Meyer, with the guitarist Michael Daves, and with his band Punch Brothers, and with the all-star cast of musicians behind the Goat Rodeo sessions, which included cellist Yo-Yo Ma. But today is different, because today, Chris Thiele is here all by himself. He joins us to play some of his new solo album of Bach Sonatas and Partitas, originally written for solo violin. Here is Chris Thiele with the Adagio movement of the Bach Sonata No. 1 in G minor. that is Chris Thiele, the mandolinist, making a return appearance here in the Soundcheck studio with something completely different, music of Bach. We heard the Adagio movement, the first movement, from the first Bach sonata in G minor, originally for violin. Chris, welcome back.
Hey, thank you so much for having me, John.
Especially with the slow movements, don't you ever, like, in the middle of a phrase, think, oh, I could just totally reel off a quick run of notes here, and it would be awesome?
You know, I feel like the minute you think that to yourself, Bach has written that very sort of thing down, you know,
I guess there's a reason we're still playing his music 300 plus years later.
Oh, God, is there ever? I've heard that people, or read or something, that people were... performers were actually sort of annoyed by how much Bach filled in at the time because they were like, hey, man, where's my opportunity to shine here?
Right. Because in Bach's day, classical musicians were expected to improvise.
They were, absolutely. And I think Bach just sat there and might have said something like, you can't improvise as well as I can compose. He was a big improviser himself, like,
of course.
Legendary.
He had the church gig every Sunday. He had to come up, he had to sit at the organ and come up with something.
That's right.
And you can sometimes hear where he's riffing on his earlier work.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
But he wrote these sonatas and partitas for solo violin. Now, I'm not a mandolin player, but isn't the tuning of the mandolin the same as the violin?
Absolutely the same. So nothing has to change.
Except for everything.
Exactly, except for everything. You know, in a piece like that, the Adagio, I feel like just as, you know, with human beings, everyone's strengths, I think, are tied to their weaknesses. You know, the things that they excel at are completely related to the things that, you know, drive you nuts about them. I'm thinking a lot of myself right now.
Me too. I'm thinking of you right now.
Okay,
as well.
Good. Yeah. but I feel like, you know, the violin, it's so emotive. I think, along with the piano, the greatest instrument in the world. Mm-hmm. There are limitations, including the fact that the violin is largely a monophonic instrument, and while polyphony is possible, it's not easy. And
right.
And Bach, you know, was really putting the violinists through their paces on this music, and it really just the amount of effort that a violinist has to put in to realize a 3 or 4 part chord. You know, I mean, they've got to make some sound to get mm-hmm. that stuff out, and so it really kind of limits. Even the most technically accomplished players, it limits them in terms of the kind of dynamic choices that they can make throughout the course of the, you know, the 6 sonatas and partitas.
Whereas the mandolin, it's much easier to play chords.
It's you know, traditionally a chordal instrument, and so that's like falling off a log, where, of course, on the flip side, what we have an issue with is the long, beautiful lines.
You know? Sustain.
Da, 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 da. And where a violinist would just make you cry mm-hmm. playing that, you know, mandolinists have to rely on something maybe a little bit more introspective.
or else go back to the old cliche of the tremolo.
Oof, yeah, I know. And I every time I even, you know, entertain the idea, I saw
Bach in Naples, right?
I saw Bach with his, like, carafe of brandy, like, in the corner just shaking his head. So I opted to try, you know, the mandolin does have a beautiful sustain. It's one that really... You gotta participate as a listener.
As a listener, right. Absolutely. And I think that is one of the other reasons we're still listening to Bach's music all these years later is that it's a rewarding thing for the listener.
Absolutely.
You know?
Oh, it draws you out, right?
Yeah.
You can't just let it happen to you.
Right.
It demands that you engage.
So what was it that got you down this path? Have you been playing Bach, you know, just for your own pleasure, like in between gigs and projects and stuff like that?
I was introduced to Bach by my two maternal grandmothers. They were both piano teachers, very accomplished. My grandma Celia sent me a recording of the Brandenburg Concertos, and my grandma Sal gave me a recording of Glenn Gould's second recording of the Goldbergs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's too many recordings in that sentence. Apologies. but the like previous to listening to that second Gould recording, I was just stuck in thinking that classical music was rhythmically less interesting than non-classical music. And Gould just blasted that out of the water with that performance. I mean, you know, with the first variation, that's the second recording speed there. And then, of course, the other one is equally rhythmically compelling, but just
in a very different way. If you're not a classical music fan, Chris is referring to Glenn Gould, the late Canadian pianist who did the Bach-Goldberg variations, actually three recordings. There were the two big ones, but then there was like an earlier one he did for the CBC in like the early 50s or something.
And that's out there somewhere. Yeah. Was it even faster?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
Well, maybe let me hedge on that. I'm not sure.
Okay.
So the idea of playing Bach on the mandolin, there were mandolins in Bach's day. Vivaldi wrote for mandolins, so they were around.
They were around. He just neatly avoided the issue.
So in terms of what we've been listening to, are these, you know, once you'd made the decision to play these pieces, was it just everything for violin is fair game, or did you choose particular sonatas and partitas because they just felt better on the instrument?
I'd messed around with a lot of different, you know, classical violin rep on the mandolin, and there are always fun little things, generally fun passages. You know, like the Mendelssohn Concerto is intermittently wonderful for mandolin. The third movement of the Barber Concerto is thrilling on the mandolin. But because
I notice you do the partita number one and not the partita number two with its 10-minute long chaconne.
Oh, it's coming.
Is it?
It's coming. Let me tell you.
All right.
And that's such a wonderful piece on mandolin. The strengths and weaknesses. I don't think that you could set the music down in front of someone who knew music but somehow didn't know this music,
mm-hmm.
and had them analyze the score. And I don't think they could say with any real conviction whether it was for violin or for mandolin. Probably a controversial opinion, but I actually think the music lends itself to the mandolin in various ways. And then Bach himself played pretty fast and loose with this very music. You know, he gave it to the lute for something. He gave the G minor fugue that I'm about to play. He gave that to the organ,
mm-hmm.
And maybe I think there's a lute transcription of that too. So I think he actually was less of the you know, let's
the purist.
Let me show you what violins can do. Yeah. Although certainly he was interested in that, and it's an exploration of the capability of an instrument tuned in fifths, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So
that second partita with one of the great pieces of music ever written, that Bach Chaconne, that'll be volume two?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Volume one of Chris Thiele's Bach Sonatas and Partitas is out now. And Chris is obviously playing for us here today on Soundcheck. He will be at Zankel Hall at Carnegie on October 22nd. In addition to a little Elliott Smith gig happening this Saturday at the Bowery Ballroom.
That's true.
You want to do this second movement of the piece we just heard?
Oh, let's do it.
All right. So this is from the Sonata No. 1 in G minor by Bach. The second movement is the Fuga Allegro, so it's a fast movement. Once again, Chris Thiele playing the mandolin live here in the Soundcheck studio. Thank you. That is Chris Thiele, solo mandolin, and the Bach Sonata No. 1 in G minor, second movement this time, the Fuga Allegro. Chris's most recent recording, Bach Sonatas and Partitas, Volume 1, is out now. And Chris, we were talking before about how the mandolin is tuned the same as the violin, the same four, you know, E, A, D, G. But on a violin, it's four strings, E,
right,
A,
right.
D, G. You have eight strings. It's four courses, but they're each double strung.
Correct.
So what does that do to, I mean, there are some pretty fast runs that Bach expects you to execute, which on a single strung instrument is possibly a little easier than on a double strung instrument.
I'd say less effort required to play it on a single strung instrument, but it's certainly not something that rears its ugly head only in Bach. I mean, that's the mandolinist's dilemma from day one, is just again building up just a little bit more left hand strength. But you know, for the mandolinists, we're rewarded for our persistence with frets.
Good point. So you know where all those notes are, whereas the violinist is just like the tiniest slip of a finger and you're...
I think embarrassment is possible on either instrument, of course.
Yeah.
With the mandolin, if you're too far afield, you know, you can run into a nasty fret buzz that a violinist can... If they're very quick,
right.
you can see the disaster happening almost in slow motion and maybe correct some of it. Whereas the mandolin, you get up against that fret and it just goes, or so it feels.
Now we had Avi Avital here in the studio.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Last year, classical mandolin player.
Yes, indeed.
So do you know him? Have you guys like swapped war stories about playing classical music on the mandolin?
I don't know. We have to meet. That's a glaring hole in my life experiences so far. He's a marvelous player.
Right. And you know, there are classical pieces written for the mandolin. Even Beethoven wrote some. They're not great pieces.
Not his best work necessarily. Yeah. No. Not bad, of course, but you know, from a man capable of the late string
things,
quartets
yeah.
and piano sonatas and Jesus, Beethoven 7, that's the one for me. Oh, peace.
Good luck playing that on the mandolin.
You know what? I've tried. I have tried that second movement. You know, the da da ga ga da 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 da.
The allegretto,
da,
yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I've tried. It doesn't work.
You know what you need is a whole bunch of other mandolinists and mandolists and mandocellists to play it with you.
I don't think. I mean, I might like that.
Volume
I don't
five.
Think, I don't think anyone really needs that.
Yeah. So how many volumes are you going to do all the partitas and sonatas for solo violin by the end of this?
Yeah.
Have you done them already? Is everything recorded?
No. Oh, the Chaconne and the C major fugue are still mountains I have to climb. I've played the Chaconne. I've played it live once. It was so much fun. Mm. Made it through without any monumental memory slips, but that piece is tough because it could shoot you into any number of its sections.
Yeah.
You know, and at 13 minutes long, there's a lot of opportunity for fret buzz, let me tell you.
Now, when you do this, when you have played Bach in the past in a non-classical setting, audiences love it. So what does this say about the perceived notion that classical music is somehow dying or past its sell-by date?
Well, you know, I had this experience up at Carnegie where they were playing, it was when they were playing all nine Mahler symphonies, you know? Was it Boulez and Barenboim?
Yes.
Yeah. And so I saw Barenboim conduct the ninth. And it was so thrilling. And we got to this passage in the third movement, you know, where that huge contrapuntal just like workout. The orchestra's, you know, dum da da dum 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 dum. All that. And like the strings just got through this incredible thing. I'm sitting up there in a box with a buddy and the strings get through this incredible passage and they just deck it, you know? And I went, yeah. And I'm like, you guys just made so much more noise than I did shushing me, for one. For another, if you didn't react, you weren't listening.
Yeah.
They were killing it. You're not gonna like give them some props for that? I understand like when in Rome, do as the Romans do, but I think the point is this music is as exciting as anything, and that performance conventions are limiting its appeal.
And the performance conventions are a relatively modern invention because in Beethoven's day, concerts were a free-for-all.
Absolutely. People booing or like cheering or demanding a repeat performance of the Allegretta.
When they said encore, they literally meant play that again.
Yeah, play that again. I need another shot at it because, you know, we can't record it and listen to it over and over again.
Right.
And I need to hear that thing right now. Yeah, and well, Mahler himself was part of getting performance conventions to where they are. You know, he was like famously, he would famously clamp down on any sort of audience response until the piece was done. But you know, that's Mahler saying that, right?
Yeah.
And we could have like hats off to Mahler and then gone back to, you know, woo, all right, dodge your body, man.
Well, I mean, opera goers do that to this day.
Right, there is a little
somebody is killing it on stage, the aria is over, and they will burst into applause right then and there. Stop the proceedings and, you know.
Excellent.
All right, we're talking with Chris Thiele, who is saving classical music single-handedly.
God, no, no, no. No, I'm just pissing the people off who are next to me in the box, that's all.
All right, Bach Sonatas and Partitas Volume 1 is out now. So you've given us the first and the second movements. You want to do the fourth movement
next?
Let's
do the fourth.
All right.
Skipping the beautiful Siciliano.
The Presto, another fast movement, the finale of the Bach Sonata No. 1 in G minor. Played live in our studio by mandolinist Chris Thiele here on Soundcheck.
Twice as much tuning with the eight strings. Yeah. Thank you.
Once again, Chris Thiele playing live in the Soundcheck studio and playing music of Bach from that Sonata No. 1 in G minor. That's the fourth and final movement called Presto. This is not the first time I have said this to you, Chris Thiele, after a live performance on Soundcheck, but show off. That's some pretty impressive playing.
He didn't say largo.
He said presto. So you've given us the first, second, and fourth movements of this fourth movement piece. Now, we got to go, but will you stay and give us the third movement so people can go to the website and get the complete piece,
Complete
experience?
It's so beautiful. The Siciliana also gives us a different key.
Yes. All right. The album is Bach, Sonatas and Partitas, Volume 1, out now. And you can hear Chris Thiele performing some of this music live at Zenkel Hall in New York on October 22nd. He's been playing for us here in the Soundcheck studio. Chris, great to see you again.
It's so good to be here, man. And let's play softball soon.
You say that every year and you never show up when I call you.
I know.
All right. Chris Thiele, my guest on Soundcheck.